You know, there's so much gathered in here that there is always a doubt. Is this truth? No, this can be truth. There's always doubt. And as long as there is doubt, there is neither mentality nor any hope of finding truth. An ignorant man is ignorant and he has no doubt. He knows he is ignorant, finished, there is an end to it, and he has no reason to doubt anything. But the man who is learned, much learned, there's lot of doubt in his mind, because he has himself learned so many contradictory things that he does not know whatever he knows is true. So avidya is collection of unwanted knowledge. Will time take you to truth? Will history take you to truth? Will geography take you to truth? What will take you to truth? When you give up all your accumulated knowledge. The first vidya is collected knowledge. Only man wants to grow from outside in. He wants to grow in knowledge from outside in. He gathers from outside and puts it in. A flower grows from inside outside. A tree grows from inside outside. The corn grows from inside outside. The stupid human brain wants to grow from outside inside. It is never possible. So knowledge is avidya. It is not ignorance. It is avidya is knowledge. Unwanted knowledge. These are difficulty producing hindrances. Avidya. The sense of personality. The sense of personality. Dr. Pandit Sharma Chok. Dr. Modi Mars. The personality doesn't end here, it's 6 feet. It wants some miles of territory on earth. Sense of personality. Even if I am dead, let there be something left there. The sense of personality. It doesn't die after my death even. That's a sense of personality. If somebody tells that personality, you are an idiot, and by God, he is burnt alive. I am an idiot, oh? Does he know me even? Taras, and then the lecture starts. That is sense of personality. Desire. They say, the desire to know truth is desire. But when they want to contradict and give some explanation, they say that the desire to know truth is desire. So there is no end to desire. So they don't talk about an end to desire. Desire is, what is a desire? At school, sometimes we had our question papers, fill in the blanks. Were we not given such papers, fill in the blanks? No sooner you are born, nature gives you a paper, fill in the blanks. And filling in the blanks till you are dead. And that is desire. Fill in the blanks. And those blanks never end. That is desire. the other day my wife told me, after that episode of Parshad Mehta, that is not a few crores enough. I said, you don't know what is money. See, the desire doesn't end at 50 lakhs or 1 crore or 5 crores or 100 crores or 1,000 crores. No! That is desire. It does not end. You want to be the minister, then chief minister, then prime minister, then go on and go on. There is no end. You keep on making blanks and filling blanks. Desires are not simple. Simple desires can be fulfilled very easily. Created desires are endless. And man lives not by simple desires, but by created desires. The farmer is content, he has one desire, let rains come now. But finish. The man in the city is not content with rain, that gutters, the rain water will go there. I want this, 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 this. Desires are not here stated. Man created desires. Endless. Hey, so God, hey. Ever seen the eyes of a man or a woman hating another person? Have you ever looked into the eyes of a man or a woman hating another person? You will not be afraid to look into the eyes of death. But you'll be afraid to look into the eyes of a person, man or woman, who is hating someone. Hey. I think God must be running away from a person whose eyes are full of hate. I think if we are born a cobra, nag or nagini, some 100-200 lives at a time, then we must be born as a human being who only hates. Because before such a person, a cobra is a mild thing. A nag or nagini is a mild thing. Hate. It is one aspect of a human being where he is lower than the lowest animal. Do you know why animals don't hate? If you see the animals, the wildest animals don't hate. Only the animal man hates and loves to hate. And then the bitter punishment gathered through such karma. And then in the next life, what you have deserved, what I have done to deserve this, the very famous sentence, what have I done to deserve this? I have not harmed anyone. Hate, that particular emotion in man that God is afraid to give to any other life, lower life. No other life knows definition of hate except a human being. See how dangerous we are? Hate. There is no equivalent in the whole universe of this quality of a human being. Hate. Anger is nothing. Jealousy is nothing compared to hate. And that man or woman, out of faith, will not stop at anything. Nothing. So that quality. Try to be away. And the sense of attachment. Of course, this is a very mild sense of attachment. You like me, I like you, take that. But the word attachment does not mean liking. What is it? Attachment. What does it mean? I will die. Do you know I will die? Can't decide. I will die is attachment. That the matter ends. Then an operation is needed to cut those two things apart. And that operation is death. Attachment. I will die. So recall. This is attachment. And you can't tear this thing away. No. You have to cut it and end it, and that is death. So attachment is not over till death. I'm not equating love with attachment. Love is not attachment. Absolute hope, desire to possess and not part with at any cost. If your attachment is to sleep, if I give you a call in the morning and ring the telephone and say, please get up, it is 4 o'clock. The attachment to sleep is, yes, I will do that and go to bed again. The attachment to sleep, no. Whether I call or God calls, no. And this is the mildest of attachment. God has created man. And then set for eternities like this, with his head in his hand, regretting, oh, what have I done? This is my biggest mistake. But now he can't undo it, unless he destroys all human beings. It is a creation that defeats the very intelligence of God. It's a terrible creation. God perhaps in his worst moment must have created a human being. How can he create a human being with hate, with attachment, with envy, with mistrust? How can he create a being like this? How can he? Take it from me, God has not created such a human being. He created a beautiful human being. That human being, after knowing that he has got the brain and mind, started living the way he or she wanted. Then God came in to tell him, please don't go this way. He said, mind your own. I know what is good for me. And ultimately became human being. But even then, God is responsible for giving a human being free will. He did not want a human being to be a slave. So he gave a human being freedom, free will, and he used this free will as his life. And today that free will has ended into a human being that we know what he is today. In Middle East, in Somalia, in Middle East, in Yugoslavia, children 8 and 9 are not afraid to use the automatic. Are not afraid. To them, what is human life, what is the value of human life, is negated, zero. The whole humanity is coming to that state slowly by use of free will. To this zero state. And then humanity will be a species in danger of extinction. That is the only remedy by God and nature. There is a point always of no return. If you cross that point, there is no hope to come back. Very fortunately, the first thing God decided in His creation was to put Lakshman Rekha. Not the Lakshman Rekha we know of in Ramayana, but the Lakshman Rekha of God. In Lakshman Rekha of Ramayana, you can't come from outside inside. In Lakshman Rekha of God, you can't go outside from inside. That is the difference of the two Lakshman Rekha. Ravan couldn't come in. But in nature Lakshman Rekha, Sita couldn't go out. You see that? So, there is a point of no return where the line is drawn by God and nature. And when we touch that line, we have to stop and go back. Fortunately. If that line is not there, extinction is the only result. And if God has to totally annihilate what He has created, there is no meaning. So He creates, He gives free will, that free will takes them to the extreme point and then it slowly brings them back. That is called the moment of grace. When the worst of decoys can get down from his horse, remove a thorn bush from the road and throw it aside and become a great seer and a great yogi. It shows how one can turn from the point of no return again. That is called the moment of grace. Even if you want to be evil, there is a limit to which you will go and not beyond. So when we see this thing happening in the world, we get frightened. So where are we rushing to? To annihilation. This world is existing for the last 5 billion years, not million, 5 billion years, 5,000 million years. It will live for another 5,000 million years. And there will be humanity. And humanity that will use its free will and go to hell and knowing what hell is will come back. That is called evolution. Going towards hell is involution. Coming back from hell is evolution. But as I told you, on cosmic scale, you are talking billions of years. Here, yoga, yes, we talk about 1 or 2 or 3 lifetimes to come back from the point of no return. This is the difference. That's the point.
You just come here to look at me, or you study something and come?
To hear you and meet you.
Pardon?
To hear you and meet you.
To hear you and then forget all about it.
But you have to help me to study.
But let's go.
I see you somewhere before. I don't know where.
What have we learned in this book one? What have we learned? You see, at this stage, we have a mental concept of certain steps to be taken. When we go over practically certain steps, then we have an experience. And till such time we have an experience, all that you have heard is spiritual fiction. Is your mind clear? As long as you do not experience, however little, whatever you hear or read is fiction, spiritual fiction. But this is a very important stage, in as much as you must have a clear mental concept of what is stated in the sutras. I have worked out a few important points for you that are stated in the sutras. The first and the most important point is the psychic nature. We as human beings, what are we? What we generally have the impression is that we have a physical body and a physical brain, both good for nothing. Some people may have some vague idea that they have an astral body, and sometimes they may leave the physical body in the astral body. But that's a very vague idea. The second body, Manas system, is the astral body Manas system that is conjoined with your physical body and brain. As 99.99% of human beings are at the present stage all over the world, we do not go beyond this stage of a combination of a physical body brain and an astral Manas system. But it would be an incomplete system, because the third body, the mental body and buddhi, also are conjoined. That is supposed to be the complex human system, what Patanjali calls psychic nature. That is called psychic nature. And this total psychic nature, to be comprehensible someday, to be experienced someday, begins with the total control of the body-brain system, the physical body-brain system. The physical body brain system today, all over the world, including all the Western countries, is in a very primitive state. We normally believe that going to school and college does give some culture to this body-brain system. What we see in India today, what we see in Europe today, what we see in Africa today, what we see in South America today, in the supposed 20th century where we are preparing to enter the 21st, that we are no more than criminals. Wilder than the wild beasts. Why? Because we have no control whatsoever on our body-brain system. If we have no control over our body-brain system, we can never hope to have any control over the entire complex system. Until that is achieved, it is mere talk for you and me. You might even tell someone, "Oh, I am studying Yoga Sutra," but that will mean nothing. You are as primitive as ever. When I say you, I include me also. I am not standing on a separate pedestal. So, this is what we are. We are beginning here and we hope to go somewhere. Somewhere along the path of psychic nature, which is a total human nature. That is the first emphasis on the very opening sutra, Book 1, Sutra 2. Then comes the second important point that is stressed, wrong identification. Since we have no idea about the complete complex human system, we identify with the physical body and brain. That is false identification. In a way, it cannot be helped if you do not know the deeper side of your own nature. The deeper side of your own nature is the remaining two body systems, the astral and the mental. So the second point is the wrong identification. The third point that is stressed here is the five states of the human brain. A human being cannot be as he is formed today or structured today in any other state except these five states. Those five states are enumerated here: correct knowledge, incorrect knowledge, fancy. What is fancy? The brain is like a pendulum. Because it stops, the clock stops. If it moves, it moves into the past and the future. There is no sensible movement of this human brain. Unfortunately, if it stops, we stop. And if it moves, we only move into the past and into the future. Sitting here, you are not with me. That is your brain. sitting here facing me, looking at me, trying to recognize me, you are somewhere else. That is the human brain. Sleep is another state. All these states, if you look into these states, mean you are a metal box in which some biscuits or something is stored into. That's all you are. You bring knowledge from outside, put it into your head, and you are a big bottle of something. And you may be a doctor, an engineer, a scientist, but yet, to my mind, you are nothing but a big bottle filled with cakes and biscuits. That's all. Because whatever your age today, between 20 to 50 to 60 to 70, whatever it is, not one of you has spent 5 minutes in constructive thinking. Not one of you has spent 5 minutes in constructive thinking. Whatever you have thought, whatever you have read, whatever you have spoken is somebody else's mind. Except for that, there is no independent thinking. Then the fourth point that is stressed here is non-attachment. The fourth point that is stressed here is non-attachment. Don't get up and go to some ashram leaving your wife and children here. That is not non-attachment. But that is all that is understood by non-attachment. To leave your wife and your children and go away somewhere. Remain in some ashram alone or in some Himalaya point and think you will get God very soon. Put Him in your pocket. That's what you think by non-attachment. Non-attachment is a state of achieving and having everything possible in this world and not caring too near paisa for it, willing to leave it behind at any moment. That is non-attachment. In America, they say, every beggar wants to make a gift of $1,000,000. When you have nothing, you want to give away many things. But non-attachment is when you have everything, you give up everything. That is non-attachment. But in that sense also, Patanjali does not ask you to understand non-attachment. Non-attachment is the state of your physical body-brain system unattached from your astral body-manas system. That is called non-attachment. And for that certain practices are necessary. So that is the fourth point that is stressed. The fifth point is voluminous. The obstacles and the hindrances. He is talking about the obstacles and the hindrances. What's the difference between an obstacle and an hindrance? An obstacle is a personal weakness. I am not able to concentrate. I am not able to control my anger. I am not able to do this. I am not able to do that. That is obstacle. But within this human race, the human race has certain weaknesses and those are hindrances. Avidya, say Patanjali uses the first word, avidya. That means you and I and all of us are zero. We know nothing. Avidya. I mean, what is worth knowing we don't know. We may know history, geography, science, arithmetic, we may know so many things, but that which is useful, we don't know. And that is avidya. Avidya meaning that I am a human being, that I have a complex structure, and that I can separate my different parts. If I don't know this, it is avidya. I am ignorant. So, we have to go over these obstacles and hindrances. If you are not well, the first thing in the morning you think of is, today I will not carry on with my practices. I am not well. That is why he says physical health is most important. It will form the first obstacle. Then you are all right, but you are lazy. Who wants to do all this in the morning? That is mental inertia, which is called mental inertia. You know what you have to do and you don't want to do because you are too lazy to do. That is mental inertia. Then you cannot cope up with all such simple obstacles in your life. When you are not able even to climb an ant hill, and you are gathered here so that you may be able to climb the Himalayas, think 10 times before you make up your mind as to what you want to do. I am not for a moment discouraging you. I am not discouraging you. But I must tell you that you have some wrong idea about what you can do. You might realize one day, if not today, after 100 more lives, that you are hardly 6 inches ahead of what you are today. That will be your normal progress. And we have to go with many million light years. Patanjali talks about roots, sanskar. I'm not talking about your roots in Bombay. I'm talking about your roots in your own self. What you have been doing, the many lives before you are here today, the structure you have formed, there is an outside structure. I may not like coffee, you may not like tea, that is not I am talking about. That is the outside structure, but the inside structure. You can't help getting angry. This is part of your structure. If that is a part of your structure, you might remain depressed for many lives to come. So, if you have read this first book at home, these are the very important points that Patanjali is talking about. If you have not really separated these important points, go home and find those slokas and read again. For example, in book 1-2, page 207, he is talking about the psychic nature. Right? On page 209, 1-4, he is talking about wrong identification. Then, on page 209, 1-5, he is talking about the mind states. On page 214, he is talking about non-attachment. On page 215, book 130, he talks about the obstacles. On 217, book 23, he talks about hindrances. They are not gone further. So, we are here, no? We are on 217, book 2. 3 we have finished? Pardon? So we are on 2-4. We are talking about avidya, the one and only hindrance. That is the cause of all other hindrances. Because if you do not know yourself, if you do not know how to take care of yourself, that is avidya. How to get out of it? Page 217, book 2-4. Avidya is the cause of all other obstructions, whether they be latent, in process of elimination, overcome, or in full operation. The sage identifies avidya as a cause of all other obstructions. Avidya, properly translated, means low awareness. It is the cause of mischief. Because one is not aware where or what an act or word will lead to. For all persons in the material world, the breeding ground of their thoughts and action is avidya, where rajas and tamas are predominant. Such persons live as per diagram 1. They are in a way unaware that they are living by wrong standards. Such sleep of ignorance is possible even in the Sofans countries with high standard of education. Rather more so, since inner evolution is not a subject. Such a latent state should be transformed into a high level of awareness. Only then one is awake. With awareness from within of a high order. Oh, that's all. Now we go to two-five. Avidya is the condition of confusing the permanent, pure, blissful and the self with that which is impermanent, impure, painful and the not-self. This is one example of avidya. We identify incorrectly. When we say I, we mean this physical body. For a little while, go right up to the beginning, come to page 10, right in the beginning.